go to an authority. Covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. He is a very good friend of this show. He is Kevin Ioli. Kevin, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you doing, pal?
Good, good. Great to talk to you, Kevin. Thanks so much. You know, there was so much talk about to UFC 257. Before Saturday, though, you had been saying that the co-main event of Hooker Chandler was going to be incredible. Let me start right there. What were you looking to see from Chandler in that fight?
I saw more than I thought I was going to see, to be honest with you, Jim. You know, Chandler is a guy that he brings it. He's a guy that probably could win fights a lot easier than he normally does because he's got that All-American wrestling background, a physically strong guy. But he kind of says, you know what, I'm going to put the wrestling in the background. And he just gets and goes like guns a-blazing and gets in guys' faces. And a lot of times that really hurts him because he ends up getting hit. And I looked at Dan Hooker in that fight, and I thought, boy, Dan Hooker is the perfect opponent for him if you're trying to beat Michael Chandler. Because Hooker, those kind of guys, he's perfect against. And I looked at Hooker as having the better striking of the two. But, you know, Hooker did not react very well, I didn't think. You know, Chandler pressured him right from the get-go, and it was almost like Hooker was surprised by that. And I talked to Dan during the week. And he had said, you know, he expected Mike to fight that way. But when the fight actually began and the pressure was coming, Dan looked like he wasn't ready for it. So I was really surprised. But a huge win for Michael Chandler.
We're talking to Kevin Ioli. You know, Kevin, I couldn't wait to see Chandler make his UFC debut. I had really high expectations, and he just smashed him. I mean, I thought he was absolutely electric. I knew he would be, but I thought he was even better than I expected. You made the point that when he signed with the UFC, it was different than when other guys came over from Bellator. What do you mean by that, and how significant was it?
Well, you know, a lot of times, you know, they signed Lyman Good, they signed Will Brooks. You know, when they signed Will Brooks had beaten Chandler and was the Bellator lightweight champion, but there was nobody that felt like Will Brooks was going to go into the UFC top five and start beating those guys. Chandler was a guy that people thought right off the bat, immediately, that he was going to be a contender in the UFC. And so that was the difference. I mean, this was a guy that they got who was in the prime of his career, who had the ability to compete with the Conor McGregors and the Dustin Poiriers and the Charles Oliveiras and Tony Fergusons. And that's what they got. And he showed, you know, Dan Hooker is in that category too. And Chandler went out there and wiped him out. So I think, you know, they went out there and they got a free agent that is the high-end guy that's rarely out there for them. And they showed it was a good investment.
We were talking to Kevin Ioli. So, Kevin, what did you make of Chandler in the post-fight, and then what is next for him?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It depends on if you take, Jim, what Dana White wants or what Dustin Poirier wants. You know, Dana White said at the post-fight news conference, and I think it makes sense, Chandler would be next for Poirier, that would be the fight. Poirier said, I don't want to fight Chandler, and his rationale for that was, I fought all these times in the UFC against the toughest guys in the world. And he fought Max Holloway twice, Eddie Alvarez twice, Justin Gaethje, Conor McGregor twice, on and on and on of tough guys that he fought. And he said, I don't see why Mike Chandler should come into the UFC, fight one fight, and get a championship shot. So I don't want to fight him. And so basically he said he would fight McGregor again in a rematch or fight Charles Oliveira. So that's an interesting thing. Now, does Dana fight with him and try to push him to fight Chandler? I don't think Dana will do that. So I think Chandler, you know, is now going to be in a different spot. So I think where Chandler goes is going to kind of depend on A, when McGregor wants to come back, and B, if they can get Nate Diaz to fight McGregor. So under what I think the UFC would think would be the best case scenario, A, they would go with a rematch between Dustin and Conor. But if that doesn't fail, then they could go Conor versus Nate, Dustin versus Charles, and then have Justin Gaethje sitting there to fight Mike Chandler, which would be another crazy sick fight.
Oh, that'd be unbelievable. Ton of options. Lots of options there across the board. Kevin Ioli is joining us. You know, obviously, I want to start firing questions to you about Conor McGregor, but you got to give Dustin Poirier his due, and I want to start right there. We knew, Kevin, that he was going to be a different fighter now than he was back 6 years ago when he fought Conor McGregor. That was a given. He's had so many wins. He's so much more mature. But what did you make of seeing what transpired in that first round and the patience that he showed, and then in the way that he finished Conor McGregor in the second round?
Yeah, you know, I was so impressed with Dustin, but that was the way I thought Dustin would fight this fight. And the thing was, you know, he made the comment at the post-fight, Jim. He said that Connor hit me with a left hand in the first round, and it was kind of like a flash KO. He said, I was out, but I was backed up against the cage, and he was in front of me. And he said, Connor didn't realize how much he had hurt me. He said, if he had followed up on it, he would have probably finished him. But that was the thing about Dustin, you know, the experience of being able to, okay, you're hurt, but you're still able to think, and you're still able to, and he did not show that he was hurt, and he was able to survive that storm. That's part of the growth of a fighter that was there. And I knew, and I said, you know, he was going to have to try to slow that first round down. You know, he just couldn't go out there and, you know, stand toe-to-toe and, you know, do what Chandler did with Connor, because that's suicide there. And you saw he took Connor down. He was kicking Connor, and that strategy was brilliant. You know, doing what Volkanovski did to Max Holloway, taking the legs out from under Connor, and, you know, hey, if you can't push off to throw your strikes, that limits a big weapon that Conor McGregor has. And those kicks are brutal. And he really hurt him with the kicks, and I think that set up what happened later in the fight.
Right, he chopped him down. Those were unbelievably brutal kicks. So after the fight, Kevin, Conor tried to chalk up the loss due to, quote, inactivity. What do you make of that explanation?
Well, you know, I buy it to like maybe 10% level. You know, I mean, Conor, you know, before the fight, he was talking about his time in Portugal and, you know, a 10-week training camp, and you can't have it both ways. And he looked great. He fought a good first round. He won the first round on pretty much everybody's card. I don't think any public, you know, thought Dustin won that first round. You know, so I thought he looked good. He looked like we expected Conor McGregor to look. So I don't really say it's inactivity. I think he'd have been better had he been active, but his timing was good. That's the thing that you normally lose when you don't fight, is timing. But his timing was good. He was connecting with Dustin. So, you know, I think it was more, you know, Dustin had grown more. And here's the difference. Not that Conor isn't a good fighter anymore. Conor is still an elite fighter. But before, he was the quickest guy in the division and had the fastest hands in the division. And maybe he's dropped half a notch. And that just brings him back into the pack. And I equate it to like golf a couple of years ago when Tiger Woods first came out, and he was driving the ball 30, 40 yards past all the other guys. They realized, hey, this guy's fit. This guy, you know, can swing his, move his body the way we can't. They went into the gym. They started working. Fitness became part of the routine, and they started driving it past him, and they were able to compete with him. And I think what happened is Conor has now come down. Other guys have gotten better. They realized he was the standard. They worked to hit the standard he was at. And now the gap that existed between him and other guys isn't there anymore. They're more even, and I think it makes for some really compelling fights.
Kevin Ioli is my guest. All right, Kevin, so to that point, the other fighters have closed the distance between Conor and themselves inside the cage. Then there's the issue of what's going on with Conor outside of the cage. For instance, you wrote, quote, he's worth around $250 million or more due entirely to his ability to beat people up while regaling them with one-liners before he does it. He has everything he could want in life except for the one important thing, peace, end of quote. How much do you think he desires peace, and could you see him walking away from the sport as a result of that desire?
You know, like, it's always dangerous to play amateur psychologist, and that's kind of what I was doing there. But, you know, I know Conor fairly well and for a number of years now. And you look at it, Jim, and his life is so crazy. And, you know, I made the point, it's like, you know, he has a Secret Service detail out when he goes to the grocery store, right? He can't go anywhere without 50 people with him. And it's just such, you know, a drain on you mentally. And I think, you know, he would love to have that, you know, where, you know, he would love it. So if he was popular when he was fighting and he was anonymous when he was not, but that's not how life works. And, you know, with social media, you're out there like that. And I just think that, you know, there's a part of Conor McGregor that says, I'd rather have the normal life than what I have now. I've made so much money. I've been so successful. He has that whiskey business that's doing well. And people don't talk about his clothing business, but his clothing business is doing really well. So Conor is in a great position with the amount of money that he has, with the business that he has, that I think, you know, he's going to look long and hard at that and say, do I want to go through the life of a fighter? Because it's not a fun life for a lot of time. You know, these guys love to fight, but they don't necessarily love to do all the grind work that it takes to get ready to fight.
All right, so Kevin, one last thought. Do you think that there's anything that took place on Saturday night that would encourage Khabib to end his retirement?
No. And I said that, you know, when he retired, I didn't think he'd come back. And I just don't think Khabib looks at Dustin or Conor as his peers. And I think, you know, he looks and says, you know what, they're not in my class. And I think he's right. I think Khabib is just, you know, on a, you know, a whole other level from everybody else out there. And, you know, he's that kind of guy. He made a commitment to his family. He was going to retire. He's kept that commitment, and I think he'll continue. So I don't think we'll see Khabib back. Even though Dana's been putting a lot of pressure on him, you know, Khabib has been resisting, and Dana said at the post-fight that it doesn't look good now for Khabib to come back. And I agree with that. I don't think we will see him back.
Kevin Ioli covers boxing and MMA for Yahoo Sports. Good friend of the program as well. Kevin, thank you so much. Great job as always. And always good to have you here in the jungle.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it, bud.
Thank you. Kevin, have a great day. Good job.